www.themouthmagazine.com.
David Gray, welcome to the Mouthcast once again.
Hello.
You have a Best Of album coming out at the end of October. So before we go any further and talk about that, let's have a listen to a track. This is Last Summer. David, it's a pleasure to talk to you again. The last time was just before the Mutineers album was released. And I remember we talked a lot about that track, about Last Summer. In fact, that's where that last podcast ended. So that's why we've played in with it here. I should say there's a deluxe edition of the new Best Of with a second disc featuring deeper cuts, including Last Summer. But listening back just now, it struck me what a gargantuan task it must have been to work out exactly what to fit on the new Best Of and what to leave off.
Yeah, it was
It's an odd process trying to package the past together, because it's obviously slightly unsatisfactory, and that's one of the reasons you can't really do justice to everything. So when I did my sort of artist picks for the second deluxe CD, yeah, it's hard to know where to start and where to stop. But I did my best. I pulled a few out of the hat that I felt should be on there. And it's the beauty of the whole thing is people can just go and listen to other stuff if they want to. It's like, but this is it. I've collected it in one place at this time. It's a look back. I think when I had a Greatest Hits album nearly 10 years ago, the first time it sort of brought me out of contract with Warner's and made sense for lots of reasons. This feels slightly different. It feels like taking stock to a certain degree. It's 25 years since I recorded my first single. That's quite a long time. And I think that's why the deluxe edition has this extra thing. I've just picked a few, not exactly rarities, but a few things that I think they're measuring posts for me as a musician that I check back with to see who I am and where I've come from. Just make sure that they're what I think they are and that I am where I think I am. And it's as I say in the liner notes, it's a strangely humbling experience when you listen back to old stuff, because you're first of all shocked by how vulnerable and human it all actually sounds, and the real sound of it rather than the one you've got in your head. and then you have to come to terms with it all over again, and hopefully in a good way. So it's always an adventure when you go back into the past, because it's not quite as you think it is. So and of course you're changing too, so you're seeing it from a slightly different perspective. But yes, I've done the best I can.
Excellent. Well, to get to this best of from Mutineers, let's just look back at your writing process, because I remember in that last podcast we talked about how that had changed quite considerably.
Yeah.
In fact, we left with the fact that you had pocketfuls of ideas, lots of fragments recorded. So I guess there is a new album coming at some point.
And I am still very, very excited. I think I'm currently dwelling in a world of creative possibilities. The fact that I'm opening myself up to new ideas and basically leaving a great big space as I'm writing a music and making a music for other people to pour ideas in, so that it changes into something that I couldn't conceive of. That's my writing process, is starting from zero without a song. So I might just have one line or just a sense of a rhythm. I might just have, on my phone, I might have just got the voice recorder on and just gone boom, 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 for some reason with a little bass line idea. And we'll just start there and see what happens. So it's not important. It's not anything. I don't know what it is. I have no perspective on it. And I just begin to write. And then a lyric will come, and hopefully everything all comes at once. But I'm just trying to escape the confines of self-consciousness, because I think that's the thing that I'm at war with. After having written a lot of music, just being too aware of what you're doing and why, and whether it's important or not, or what you're trying to say. So I try and skirt around those things by working in a very, very fast, spontaneous way, without the situation being loaded with importance. So just literally the joy of making music. And I'm very, very fortunate that I found a great producer in Andy Barlow. He wasn't available to make another record. And I've wound up with a young guy who has taken, I think we've taken things even further in some ways than I did on the Mutineers record. He's highly intuitive, someone who very swiftly won my trust. And I think this is what it comes down to. Yeah, his initial reactions always float my boat. It's like the way he treats the track and sort of in a slightly electroacoustic way, samples some of the stuff I'm doing or little bits and feeds it back, loops it back, and I begin to work on top. So yeah, we found a rhythm and a way of working, and lyrically and in every other way, I feel that this is going to be a really important record. Like Mutineers was, I think it's going to be very significant, and it's got a really light kind of forward momentum to it, like much more up than any record I think I've ever made. I think that's what we're going to be creating, something that has a kind of lightness to it. It doesn't feel like I'm labouring over it, or labouring over making a point. So anyway, so that's where I'm at. I'm deep in the creative process, and I'm being yanked out of it to sort of present my past to the world again, but also to myself. I've come to terms with the fact that I'll have to get back to my work once I've done this touring and you know, presentation.
I think you just used the word significant talking about Mutineers, and I think that's a great word to use about that record and about your writing process for that record. It was a significant change, because I imagine you sat 25 years ago with your guitar, just working your way to a good chord sequence and a handy melody.
Yeah.
I guess the limitations of what was at your disposal actually shaped the writing process as much as access to bigger and better toys has shaped it in more recent years.
So beyond that, also my own fear of what I didn't know. So other people's taste, changing my music, then was it still mine? Was that the point? I think early on I was very intimidated by studios and producers and people who wanted to change the music, posh it up. I thought everything was a compromise potentially, whereas now I see it as the opposite. I just don't think it's precious stuff at all. I can always go away and write on my own, but I'm opening myself up to the drummer's ideas and his rhythms and the producer's ideas and anyone who's got anything they want to throw into the pot, because I'm looking for something different and I'm looking for a new way. So I've come massive distances since that early stage. Essentially, though, what I'm on about and what I'm trying to do is the same, but I live in a very different world in terms of the way I set about the process.
Okay, so what are you on about and what do you want to do? Communicate, I guess.
Yeah, I think that my instincts are always melodic, and I always want to... I want pure poetry. I want to capture something that shine a light on something where not just the lines, but the space between the lines really starts to ring out, and it surprises me. Things that I can mull over again and again, and I still don't think I've got to the bottom of them. So it's much harder to accurately describe what it is that's the goal when you're in this process. But you know what isn't the goal, and the goal is not to make something that's so mundane, banal, anodyne, prosaic, predictable, that you already know what it is as soon as you started listening to it. You want something that escapes those boundaries, surprises you and surprises the listener and replenishes itself. So it's, I don't know, I don't... There's some deep need. I think there's a reason why you get hooked on the creative process. It's a kind of addiction, and it's obviously a need, a deep need to make this connection, and not just once, but again and again and again. And then eventually it involves the audience. Initially it involves you and the speakers and your own ears and your own mind and the people you're making the music with. And then that circle grows, first to a few others, your management or whatever, family, friends, and then suddenly the world. And what happens in all that, as those ripples expand, it's very unpredictable. It's in the lap of the gods. You have to be happy with it from the very first. You make something you're happy with, then you listen to what other people, and sometimes that will affect the way you think about it. Yeah, right, okay, that's really good. I was questioning whether that was of any worth at all, but I see what you're saying. You like that because... Anyway, so I don't know what I'm up to. Basically, let me correct what I said earlier. I still don't know what I'm on about, and I still don't know why.
Again, then, bearing in mind everything that you've just said, are you actually conscious when you're writing that you might be writing a hit? Do you have a hit pile and an art pile? Are you able to delineate your writing like that?
No, it's not quite as cut and dry as that. I don't think I really know what hit is, but I'll feel like something might have mass appeal. I mean, I'm often wide of the mark by a country mile, but I'll think, yeah, what about this one? And everyone, what? You know, Last Summer is the next single, you know. Who couldn't understand that? Yeah, so I don't know. It's the criterion of what a hit might be and what you need for a hit are beyond me, and they're not really my concern. I think that part of it is, like I say, that's a process that kicks in. When you've gone a certain distance and made a certain amount of the recordings, then people are going, yeah, it's got to be this one. You know, I never really know what they're on about afterwards. With the benefit of hindsight, I can see what they meant. You know, I do have a sort of art pile, though. That's definitely true. What I call it is my sort of no-tempo pile. So really, really drifty stuff that's incredibly sparse, which I'm starting to have a huge amount of. I'm trying to find the best means of putting that out. That won't be this next record. That's going to be like a side project. But I now have a huge amount of this kind of drifty music that I'm really, really proud of. And it's the reason it's not going to be a part of the next record is just simply because it wouldn't fit comfortably next to it.
Do you mean sort of almost soundtrack stuff?
No. No, it probably is more filmic, but there's still songs, but there's like negligible rhythm. You know, it's sort of, they're just slow, spacious, and there's a quote, a prairie bass. You can't have too much, two things you can't have too much of. This is a 4AD quote from Evo, the main guy there. Two things you can never have too much of, slow motion and reverb.
That served 4AD very well, didn't it?
Yeah, exactly. Play some prairie bass, he once said to my mate. Prairie bass. Yeah, that's a cherished term. So it's kind of drifty, soundscapey songwriting that, yeah, stuff that's never going to be daytime radio in a million years. So it's... I've got a pile of that, so I do sort of subdivide things, and occasionally things like Gulls jump onto the main record because it feels like the right time to put them in, and other times I feel that I can't quite imagine. I won't know yet. I've not got to that stage of the process in terms of the stuff I've been recording, but I'm looking for sort of an umbrella outlet where I can put visuals and this drifty music and maybe some writing out into the public domain without it being David Gray released. My working title is The Adventure Club, so you'll have to wait to hear more about that. That's something I'm hoping to launch next year, and that will just be putting music out in a quiet way, along with other things, recipes for blackberry jam and, you know, that kind of stuff. You can tell it's going to be massive, yeah?
Yeah, it's going to be huge. Biggest thing you've done, Dave.
A million the world outside is night blindness, can't see. Your bright eyes are what the time is. 25 past eternity. Here listening to the siren coming closer, now further away. What we gonna do when the money runs out? I wish that there was something left to say. Where we gonna find the eyes to see a brighter day? I'm sick of on the same old answers, last chances, stones, propping mountains up on matchsticks, dragging baskets full of bombs. Honey, please don't stop your talking, 'cause there's a fear. Thank you.
That was Night Blindness from White Ladder. You just mentioned radio a moment ago, David. And obviously the album White Ladder, your fourth album, had those two big hits, Babylon and This Year's Love, which are still frequently played on the radio today. I must ask you about White Ladder. Legend has it that because you'd not been successful up to that point, that album was the last throw of the dice for you. Is there truth in that?
No, I don't. I think there's some truth to it, but I think these things get over-dramatised. You know, we didn't get to the crossroads where that decision was yet to be made. Probably the way I would phrase it was that I, leading into White Ladder, I was disillusioned, obviously. Things hadn't worked out. But would I blame the world or would I think I could do better? I decided that I could do better. So that record was the process I'm describing now of opening myself up. Well, Clune played a huge part in the drummer and in those songs. And then when Yestin got involved again, he brought his soundscape in. But we all worked together. We slaved over it. Took every hi-hat, every line, every tiny detail we took care of. It was all personally hand-drawn. And if our labour of love had then just fallen on deaf ears, I'm sure that my path and my attention, my heart would have been injured. I think I would have just had to find a safer way, and I would have probably moved in a different direction. I think that's definitely true. But the opposite happened. Everybody loved it. The rest is history. So I didn't get to that point, but I would say that it's no exaggeration to say it hurt a lot, the first three records not working out and the kind of shows I do and the sort of indifference in most places I went. It was very difficult. You know, if it weren't for Ireland and the passion and love that I got there, the story might have been different again as well.
I'm very, very humbled by what you said there about looking at your situation and wondering what you could do better, because very often in life it's all too easy to find yourself in a situation that you're not happy with and not take responsibility and blame everybody around you or everything around you rather than think, what can I do? What could I have done differently? What could I do better?
It's easy to put your armour on, you know, and cast a cynical eye on everything from the news to the bullshit that people talk and the things they buy, the way that they act, and think that the world's wrong. But it's not just a big crock of shit. It's not all just a lie. It's more. So you just have to face up to that fact and get over yourself. But it's obviously depending what's just happened to you, which tragedy or which disappointment has befallen you, that can be a very difficult journey. So, yeah, that was the point I was at. And that's the kind of person I suppose I am. I'm not a quitter. I'm someone who'll keep going till the end.
What do you think it was about the songs on White Ladder that resonated with people? You know, why that particular time? Why that album and not, say, the third album?
It was much more coherent, but I think the songs were very, very wide open. It was very, very heartfelt and very unguarded. And also the soundscape was like taking electronic elements and really mixing them with songwriting. It was a blend that, in terms of the media's approach to the record, made their job a lot easier, because everyone's petrified of looking old-fashioned or wearing the wrong look this year, you know. And it's like they think throwing a few electronic noises in is making all the difference to a track. It's quite laughable, but it had those sort of ingredients. They were very much a part of its identity. So, you know, but I guess, I don't know, it was a magical moment. The songs, all that led up to it, obviously fed into it. And it was the coming together of not just me and my songwriting and my idea of recording. I was recording at home as well. I mean, it was very intimate in that way. And that's all part of the very open-hearted nature of the record. I prefer to record in my own space. And I took control of some of those sonic elements. I started to get hands-on with some of the effects and some of the ideas.
I always think of it as a small record with big feelings.
Yeah, I think it's. I remember some of the feedback that happened early on was that people were listening to it a lot in like Goa and Koh Samui or whatever. It was like a chill-out record, but yeah. Clubbers. And I think clubbers have got very good taste. You know, I think they listen to music in a really interesting way. Although it's dop, dop, dop a lot of the time, I think they're very attuned to lots of other stuff, because what goes into club music and electronic music, there's a massive range of interests, influences and things and ideas from jazz to whatever that get dragged in there, and they seem very open-eared as a listenership. that was a good sign when people said, you know, people are really listening to your record. It's like a chill down record, you know.
So that art pile you've got and the blackberry jam recipes may be a real goer in Goa.
We'll see. There's not many blackberries out there, so I'd love to be chicken noodle soup for that.
Yeah. So what was that first flush of success like for you? Was it what you thought it was going to be? Did it change you at all?
It was quite amazing. The ascent was... We were just grinning from ear to ear for about 18 months. I mean, it was absolutely amazing. First of all, in Ireland, then it unfolded in the UK, America. It did get to the point when it was like... Well, it came home to roost after White Ladder, when you kind of got home finally after 3 years on the road. And the world was a different place. That's when it got sort of weird. But the actual bit itself of making it was just a celebration. We loved every second of it. You know, we tried to play as many shows as we could. We were all over the place, particularly in America. We went round and round and round. It was astonishing, the whole thing.
Yeah. So from White Ladder to here, to Mutineers, to the Best Of and the next album, does it feel like it's been a long, mad journey down an uneven road, or has it been a relatively smooth drive?
It's easy to forget the bumps, you know, after time, you know, but it's like I wouldn't change anything. That's generally the way I feel. There's things that I'm not proud of, things that haven't worked out, records that I don't think were what they should have been. There's bits that I struggled with and bits when I went into my shell. Sort of hid in myself. I didn't know how to cope, both through failure and then later through success. But that's all part of my, the fact that that's how I deal with things. That's a part of my journey. And I think I'm on a slow curve in terms of my sort of creative development. And that this is going to be a very rich, I'm thinking of Sinatra. I'm going to have great middle years. I feel like I've hit form again right now, and I've got to make up for lost time. I'm always in a hurry to do as much as I can. I've got to make sure I don't drive myself demented in that front, but I feel like there's so much in front of me. I've never been more excited about the work I'm doing than I am now, and you can't ask for more than that. And the whole thing all just feels a part of that. It feels like it leads up to this. It's like, one question I've been asked quite a lot is, why are you doing a second Best Of? I said, well, to begin with, I guiltily tried to half answer the question without sounding like some kind of sellout, but it's my music. I'm my own record company. It's not easy to keep existing out there, so we're trying to draw attention to the fact that it all exists and bring it to people's attention. I could stick my music on an advert. That's not something I'm interested in doing. I'd rather go this way and just actually put it out and put some new music on there, recut some of the old tracks, and try and tell everyone about it. I think that's a more honest approach. So it's where we are at, and it sort of seals things off at this point. And I feel that there's a massive swathe of music that's going to happen over the next few years. So I think that's where I'm at. I'm really looking forward to the shows as well, I've got to say, because I'm going to be doing a sort of solo approach.
For the first time in over 20 years as well.
Yeah, like over 20 years since I've done a solo tour. The last one was in Ireland, I think, in 1995 or 96. So, I just look for where there's space, and to put the band together and try and reinterpret or do something different than what we did with the Mutineers setup. It would be like a massive undertaking, and there's not enough new material, so I couldn't really see. So I just thought, well, I'll strip everything away and take it right back to its bare essentials. And I've got these loop pedals, these delay pedals, so I'm going to be sort of playing over the top of myself a little bit. So it'll be very creative, I think, as well. It won't just be pin drop silent stuff. It's obviously going to be very conversational. So anyway, sometimes when you tear everything away, you can really hear the song. I think it's going to be, I'm thinking the gigs are going to be great, actually. I'm really excited.
Excellent. Well, to round up, David, I'll say this, that despite this new Best Of compiling some absolutely fantastic moments from the last 20 years or so, the most recent studio album, Mutineers, really does suggest, from David Gray, the best is yet to come.
Good for you, mate. That's my sentiments entirely. So I feel actually that this sort of super creative period that seems to be unfolding, I can't help but lurch toward melody and sort of, I want to connect, basically. It's music. I don't know what to make of the mainstream. It's a sort of rather uninspiring place. It's like in the 80s you had sort of Prince, Teardrop Explodes, Echo and the Bunnymen, The Cure, The Smiths, New Order, everything. The mainstream was all this stuff. U2, Pride, In the Name of Love. What have you got now? Occasionally you got a couple of good tracks by Drake or Rihanna, and then maybe a, you know, Arcade Fire single every now and again. It's not quite the same. You've got this very, very poppy, in-your-face chart music. It almost gives you tinnitus just to listen to it. And then you've got this massive, sort of incalculably huge underground. But it's the mainstream. I want to make music that connects with anybody. I don't ever think of satisfying some weird sort of elite clique who know what they're talking about. I don't believe in that. And I don't believe in the idiocy that supposedly pervades all as well, as in terms of broader listenership. So it's into that space that I'm always trying to throw my stuff. I want it to connect with everybody and anybody. And I do feel, again, this open-heartedness that I'm sensing in what I'm doing and the way that I'm writing. I'm feeling like it could connect. But as I say, that's in the lap of the gods. We'll have to see what happens when we get there. But it's all to come.
Fingers crossed. Well,
yeah.
Maybe those pots of jam will come in handy in making sure that happens.
You get a free pot of blackberry jam. I've only got five this year. I didn't pick as many blackberries, so just the first five purchases.
David Gray, thank you very much.
Thanks, Steve.
Perfect pictures torn in two. Pick your moments, surely do. And what the hell got into you anyway? Road like silver, sky like silk. Drink it down like mother's milk. You drain that cup until it melts away. Step to the mark. Yeah, that my journey might begin. Open the door into the dark. He walked right in, and he wouldn't leave. No, he wouldn't leave. Yeah. Yeah, that my journey might begin. Next thing I knew, calling out war I couldn't win. I reached out for you, opened the door, they rushed right in. They wouldn't leave. No, they wouldn't leave. 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 What the hell got into you anyway?
www.themouthmagazine.com